This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, we look at the latest jobs report out this week and find out how things are trending in employment numbers as the year comes to a close. Now it's Food Friday, and this week we're keeping things close to home with a look at Wisconsin cheese. It's a great time of the year to expand our cheese horizons and try something new, maybe while we're putting together a cheese plate for our holiday get-together or making a gift box. Or maybe you're just looking for some new favorites. We're here to help navigate all the choices out there, and we want to hear from you, too. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What is your favorite cheese made here in the state? Or beyond, that's okay, too. Is there a cheese you've been curious to try, but you're not sure what all the fuss is about? What are you putting on the cheese plate? Maybe for the holiday gathering this year? Do you keep it simple or get artistic? Do you have favorite things to pair with the cheese? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Central Time executive producer Dean Knetter is with us, our resident cheese guy. Hey, Dean.
Hey, Rob. It's good to be with you.
You like cheese. Let's get this right out there. You are a cheese aficionado, as they say, as the youth say.
Well, I can't claim to be an aficionado, but I do love cheese. I did get the chance to be a cheesemonger for about 2.5 years, and that really gave me a lot of exposure to different types of cheeses and a lot of respect for what our cheesemakers here in Wisconsin do. These are hardworking people doing some really cool stuff with cheese.
And you had your hand in a cheese encyclopedia at one point, literally?
There's an industry publication out there somewhere, Rob, where either my hands or maybe my hands and arms are like in a picture of how to display a cheese shelf or something. So that's my contribution to the Wisconsin cheese world, I think.
All right, now let's get into cheese plates. You have many thoughts. We can keep it simple or get really fancy. What's the range of cheese platery?
I think you're right to mention that keeping it simple is totally fine. A cheese platter does not have to be fancy. It doesn't have to be expensive. It's just about whether you enjoy it or not. That's the important thing. If you and your guests like it, that could be cheddar, Swiss, and Colby and some crackers, totally fine. That said, if you want to get a bit more elaborate and artistic with it, that can be a lot of fun.
You have some odd advice about a cheese platter. Literally, again, the number of kinds of cheese that should be on a plate.
This is not a hard and fast rule, Rob, but I tend to think that picking an odd number of cheeses, it just kind of looks better. So 1, 3, 5, 7, on from there. It looks good, and it takes away some of the pressure of what thing on the board does this cheese go with. You don't need to pair one thing to the other. The odd number is just, it's a fun place to work from.
Talking to our own Dean Knetter, it's Food Friday, and we are enjoying some Wisconsin cheese. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite cheese for eating, for cooking? Do you have a favorite thing to do on a cheese platter, maybe for a family get-together? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. All right, Dean, let's pick our cheese for our cheese platter. You've got a few different categories you divide cheeses into. What are those?
Yeah, I think a three-tiered approach is a great place to start. The first thing you want to put on there is something familiar for people, something non-threatening that they're going to recognize and reach for. That could be, a Gouda, some cheese curds, a butter case, a Havarti, something that people know and enjoy, and also tends to be a lower-cost cheese, so you can save some money there, too. Beyond that, get a little adventurous, something that's familiar yet a bit stronger flavored, an aged cheddar, maybe a bandage cheddar, or something like a Gruyere, an Alpine style cheese. Maybe try a semi-hard cheese made with sheep or goat milk, too. Don't be afraid of that. And finally, that's the next cheese you're going to pick. Try to wow some people. Get them out of their comfort zone a little bit. That might be with a big blue cheese, a cheddar blue. That exists, that's out there, or a soft cheese, whether that's a fresh sheep or goat cheese or something a little funkier. Don't be afraid of that either.
Now, I might take a bite of one cheese and that puts a taste in my mouth and then it makes the next cheese taste weird. What do we do to clear the palate like the wine people do?
That's a really good point. If you don't have wine or beer already on hand, I'd say make sure you have some apples or some grapes on that board. I mean, the apples pair well with a lot of things to begin with, cheddar especially, but having that sort of hit of a fruit flavor in there and a little bit of juiciness, that really does help reset the palate, especially if you're going from something, you know, really strong, like, say, a five-year-old cheddar or something, back down to a more mild Gruyere. You want to still be able to taste the cheese, and that'll really help.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Gary is with us in Iron River. Hi, Gary.
Hi, good afternoon, guys. Hey, I'd like to offer a thought. I like to put some skewered assemblies on a cheese plate, things that people won't normally put together. Lots of people don't like strong blue cheese. You take some strong blue cheese, put a piece on a skewer, put a piece of date on it. Or take a piece of strong blue cheese and put a piece of dried apricot on it. And the combination of the sweetness, the sharpness of the cheese, or the sweetness of the dried fruit, the sharpness of the cheese makes a really nice combination that lots of people will go away and say, huh, this is a whole lot better than I thought it was.
And Gary, do people come back and ask for more at the next get-together?
Of course, they always do. But they also would like a little bit of nuts and honey, which I do as well on cheese plates.
Gary, thank you so much. First of all, Dean, his idea, it's a little effort, but it's not too complicated. A toothpick, some blue cheese, and one of those pieces of dried fruit he talked about.
Gary, I think that's an awesome idea, and it makes it really easy to eat for people, too. They can just pick it up and go. And pairing blue cheese with anything sweet is just a classic combination that always helps kind of cut down the intensity of that blue cheese. I've always heard about pears and honey with blue cheese, but that date and that apricot, that definitely works, too. That's a perfect combination. And I think those would also be really good for a Gruyere as well.
Gary, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll be by in a couple hours to try your cheese platter. Thanks for sharing that with us. He also mentioned the nuts. Do nuts have a home in cheese platters?
Definitely, and not just to fill space. They can do that for sure. But nuts are a great sort of in-between snack for when you're going between cheeses along with those grapes and those apples we mentioned earlier. And there's a lot of different types of nuts out there in terms of spiced nuts, candied nuts. You can play around with the sweetness, the savory flavors, and sort of tailor those to the cheeses that are already on your board.
Before we move away from cheese platters, Dean, we should probably talk about crackers a little bit.
Oh, yeah, crackers. You know, for myself, Rob, I don't know about you, I like the cheese to shine, so I don't like a cracker that's too strongly flavored. If you're going into the rye cracker territory, that can tend to really overwhelm some cheese. You're going to need something really strong to stand up to that. That said, if that's your groove, go for it. Get the stronger flavored crackers. But I tend to like a nice plain wheat cracker or something maybe with some herbs like, rosemary, thyme, that kind of thing. Otherwise, just a classic, townhouse buttery cracker does the trick too.
Before we get to how to find new cheeses, Dean, that's coming up and people can call in. By the way, if you have a favorite cheese to recommend, you can call in at 800-642-1234. I want to share, Nancy in Facebook wrote in and said the first favorite cheese is Gouda with fenugreek. The herb.
Oh, very nice.
Well, okay.
What do you think, Rob?
For Nancy, one time I accidentally bought Gouda with fenugreek in it, and man, you could really taste the fenugreek. And I don't know if I was really that into that. I'm not going to lie to you, Dean.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, Rob, we may have to disagree here, and that's okay.
The first time ever.
That's right. We can do that civilly here on Central Time. Fenugreek, if folks haven't had it, I think that the best way I could describe it is maybe a maple kind of flavor, almost a little bit like maple syrup, but a bit stronger. The place that I know that makes a great fenugreek gouda is Marika Cheese. And we've actually talked to the cheesemaker, Marika Penterman, here on Central Time before. The fenugreek seeds that go into the gouda, I think, are very soft, so that you're not going to run into hard stuff in the middle of your cheese. But it has a nice, sweet, mapley flavor. I think it's great for fall and winter time. But it is an acquired taste. I'll give you that, Rob.
I feel like my face is, when you see a cat and it's got a weird taste in its mouth that makes that face? I feel like I'm making that face, just flashing back to that right now. Agree to disagree. It's Food Friday. Central Time's Dean Kinetter is with us. We're talking about how to discover a new favorite Wisconsin cheese Maybe while building a cheese platter for our holiday gathering, you could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have a favorite cheese made here in Wisconsin or from beyond our borders? Has there ever been a cheese that you weren't sure you were going to like, but it took you by surprise? And what to you makes a quality cheese platter? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our Food Friday talk about Wisconsin cheese with our own Dean Canetter, how to put together a great holiday cheese plate, how to branch out and try something new. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Take a recommendation, leave a recommendation for a favorite cheese. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Let's go back to your calls now. Carla is with us in Madison. Carla, hi.
Hi. I'm a lifelong Wisconsinite. I love cheese. However, I've had to go on a dairy-free diet. Mm. And I'm wondering if anybody has any suggestions for a decent vegan cheese, because so far everything I've tried is disgusting.
Anything come close to the mark for you, Carla, or just all a wash?
So far, the only thing that comes close is some of the grated cheeses. I don't like the slices, but Daya makes a facsimile that's sort of cheese-like.
Oh, Carla, thanks for that call. If anyone listening has a vegan cheese that they like, that they have positive feelings about, call in now, 800-642-1234. I know most of your work is in the non-vegan cheese field. Dean, any vegan tips out there, though?
Carla, I can't say that I have too much knowledge about the vegan cheese world, but I know it's becoming a lot more popular. Nut-based cheeses are definitely growing in popularity. You're able to actually find those in stores now. Almond and oat milks are being used to make softer cheeses. A couple of brands I've heard of are Treeline and also Violife, too. So those might be a couple to check out. But I don't have too much knowledge on that. I'd love to hear from people if they know some themselves.
Other than that, it might be trial and error. Good luck, Carla. Let's go to Jeff now in DeForest. Jeff, hi.
Oh, hi. How you doing?
Good. What do you got for us, Jeff?
Oh, well, we're having a bunch of different people over the next couple, 3 weeks with the holidays, and we normally entertain them with cheese and stuff and salamis and things, but we oftentimes buy local cheeses from around here in DeForest, and I was wondering if you guys recommend doing that, or do you have some recommendations for cheeses from some other states, or should we try stuff from France or Italy, or should we just mix it up on different nights?
Jeff, thanks for the call. Dean, I know you're a homer and you love going for Wisconsin cheeses. If Jeff wanted to cross a border, do you have anywhere you'd point him?
Oh, yeah. I think that the Midwest is a great place to look. There's always the great debate of Vermont versus Wisconsin. There's a ton of great cheeses in Vermont. So if you wanted to set up it's out there, Rob. It's a hot one. But if you wanted to set up a little contest between those two states, you could. And Jeff, I have one that you might be interested in. It is a Gouda called Jeff's Select. And it's a cheese that is made here in Wisconsin. The cows are milked in our state. And it is aged across the border in Minnesota. It's from a company called Caves of Faribault. And they do some really cool stuff. It's a crowd-pleasing cheese. I think most people are going to like it. You know, it fits with the name, too. So that's a good place to look as well.
Yeah, tell them you made it. I think that's the way I'd go, Jeff.
Yeah, go right there. Yeah.
What I'm going to do.
Awesome. Good luck, Jeff. Thanks for the call. Michael joins us now in Kokana. Michael, hi.
I just wanted to ask the guest what he thinks of, 12-year-old age cheddar from Wisconsin. I really like it when it's old, it has crystals, and it's crunchy.
Yeah, Michael, I can't agree more. I love those old cheddars. Hooks is a company that goes from 1 year all the way up to occasionally 20 years, but 15 you can find pretty regularly as well. Widmer's also makes some great old cheddar. I love those calcium crystals. When you get past that 3 to 5 year mark, you start noticing those. Those used to be seen in the cheese world as kind of a fault in cheeses. Now they're seen as a feature and like a desirable one too. Cheesemakers will actually be adding certain cultures to their cheeses to help those develop earlier than that 3 to 5 year mark. So it's kind of become a bit of a fad, and for good reason.
Thanks a lot for that call, Michael. Now, it seems like that sharpness, I mean, it hits a point in that curve somewhere, Dean, where it can get a little too sharp for me. And I'm thinking in the, like, maybe 5 to 8 year range where it seems like that. But I've heard it gets mellower sometimes after you hit, like, 10 or 12. Is that true?
I think you're right about that, Rob. When you get to that 12 to 15-year mark, there's a bit of a butteriness that takes over. It is still a sharp cheese. There's no doubt about that. But it does tend to smooth out in that old age range. But that 5 to 10 year period can be pretty intense, pretty sharp. Again, if you're putting it on a cheese plate, have something like a wine or some fruit to stand up against it. Otherwise, the 3 year cheddar, I think, is kind of the golden range. That's my favorite. It's smooth enough that you can just snack on it, but you get a lot of flavor too.
My kids got hooked on, like, they would just, like, buy the highest number you can, Dad. I'm like, hey, it gets more expensive.
It's an expensive proposition.
Those other numbers get higher, too. Back to your calls now. Lenny is with us in Lake Geneva. Lenny, hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What do you got for us, Lenny?
That lady called looking for vegan cheese?
Yeah.
I'll tell you, there's one that's made by a company called Chao, C-H-A-O. And it's pretty good, man. It's sliced. And then there's another one made by Kite Hill, K-I-T-E. They make a ricotta in a little tub.
Oh.
It's fantastic. And then my last recommendation, because I'm in the same boat, I got to stop eating dairy. The other one is there's a brand called Myoko, I think, M-Y-O-K-O. They make it from cashews. It's in a tub. It's fantastic, I'm telling you. And I mean, you might think you're eating real cheese.
What kind of cheese or what style of cheese is that Myoko that you like?
That one's like a little goaty cheese, you know? Oh. It tastes like that.
Awesome. Lenny, thank you so much. I hope that caller's still listening and can try out a few different ones. Thanks for the tips. We're talking about cheese on this edition of Food Friday. Central Time's own Dean Kinetter with us. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your favorites or your questions. Let's go back to your calls now. Carrie is with us in Kronenwetter. Carrie, hi.
Hi. So I had an opportunity a number of years back to travel to Switzerland and visit some relatives there. And we were served a cheese called raclette. And it's a harder cheese. And they have a special little grill that they melt it on. Mm-hmm. And they scrape it then onto boiled red potatoes. And it was just heavenly.
What, it's called raclette?
Raclette.
Interesting. Carrie, thanks a lot for sharing that. Dean, have you encountered that or anything like that?
Yeah. First, Carrie, I am jealous of that trip to Switzerland. I mean, it's a beautiful country from what I see. And the romance around the cheese making there is almost overwhelming, it seems like. But raclette is really tasty stuff. It has sort of a little bit of a slightly meaty flavor to it. It's a pretty savory cheese. You can eat it on its own. You can also melt it over things. I've seen devices where you'll heat up one side of an entire wheel of cheese and scrape that down onto vegetables or a sandwich or something. It's really luxurious. It's really good stuff. And there are a couple of raclettes being made in Wisconsin. One, I believe, is from the Roth Cheese Company in Monroe. Also, Raleigh Cheese is out with a newer cheese for them called Crown Jewel. And I believe that's a raclette style, too. So a couple local options as well.
Carrie, thanks a lot for sharing that story with us. Dean, for people looking to expand their cheese horizons, they're used to, you know, maybe some cheddar, some brick, whatever. They love all this talk about cheese. How do you recommend people get started on branching out to new stuff?
I would say think about what you like about cheese and extrapolate from there. If you know you like strong cheddars, try something a little different in that ballpark. You know, maybe a grass-fed cheddar or a cheddar made with sheep's milk. If you like something buttery or a little more mild, maybe an Alpine cheese like Pleasant Ridge Reserve or one of the Roth Grand Crus. Just kind of like think about what you already like and go from there. Also, at your local cheese shop or store, ask people. They've probably sampled the cheeses. They can point you in a good direction too.
Time for at least one more caller. We've got Dirk with us in Kenosha. Dirk, hi.
Hi. I was going to join in on this heretical conversation of vegan cheese. Apologize in advance. But I am not a vegan, but I have looked into making cashew cheese. Some friends were interested. And there's a recipe that I came across, and it has a funky ingredient called kappa carrageenan. And it makes it so that the cheese sets up, it becomes solid in just a matter of seconds. And you can make these recipes in about 10 minutes.
Oh.
And it's good, and it's grateable, and it melts well. And speaking from the point of view of somebody that, you know, this stuff is icky to me most of the time, this stuff's pretty good.
All right. Dirk, wow. Thanks a lot. Great recommendation for that vegan cheese-needing listener earlier. Maybe do it yourself. I love it. Let's take one more recommendation. Terry is with us in Milwaukee. Terry, hi.
Hi.
What's your cheese recommendation, Terry?
My cheese recommendation is a Monterey Jack with hickory nuts. Ooh. From a little creamery out in Zittau, Wisconsin.
Do you know the name of the creamery?
It's Union Star.
Union Star. Terry, thanks a lot for that. Monterey Jack with hickory nuts, Dean.
Wow, that sounds intriguing. I haven't had it, and it's always really exciting to find a small cheesemaker in your area that you can support and enjoy. That's really cool.
Thanks for that call. Dean, in our last half a minute or so, I don't know, what's got you excited in the cheese world right now?
Only made during fall and winter is Rush Creek Reserve from Uplands Cheese. It is a cheese that screams Wisconsin, a soft cheese wrapped in a strip of spruce bark. It's a great centerpiece for any holiday. That one's got me pretty pumped.
Can you taste the spruce?
Yeah, you can taste some spruce, you can taste some grass, a little bit of everything, Rob.
Dean, thanks a lot. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks, Rob.
That's Central Time executive producer and resident cheese guy, Dean Kinnetter. He joined us for a cheese edition of Food Friday. Thanks to everyone who called in with your favorites. You can keep letting us know over on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Coming up Monday at 7 on the morning show, it's the State Capitol Report. Join the conversations with State Education Superintendent Jill Underley and Republican State Senator Andre Jacques. As always, you can listen along and join in with your own questions. That's coming up Monday morning at 7 here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. Coming up today at 6 on 1A+, President Biden puts the fight for democracy center stage and puts his Russian counterpart on notice. Germany's new chancellor starts work on a new chapter for his country. And could Boris Johnson lose his job for not coming clean about a Christmas party? That and more on the Friday News Roundup today at 6 on 1A+. Now, a story we've been following for much of the pandemic, the movement of people in and out of jobs. Unemployment numbers are low. According to the latest weekly numbers, new unemployment claims were at their lowest point in over 50 years. But new job numbers for last month were lower than expected. And lots of people are leaving jobs for a variety of reasons. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Are you looking for a job? Did you just start a new job, just leave a job, or get promoted? If you had some kind of employment change in the last year or two, if you hire people, what are things like for you right now? Tough to find staff, or are things going pretty well? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Mark Schaefer is Associate Professor of Economics and Director of the Center for Business and Economic Analysis at St. Norbert College. Mark, welcome back to Central Time.
Rob, pleasure to be here.
Well, one of the new pieces of info out this week, the Federal Labor Report, saw a jump in the number of job openings up to a record, near record, I should say, high of 11 million. Do we know where those openings are coming up? Is there a particular sector of the economy that's driving that increase?
Yes. I mean, right now, I mean, the big conversation, as you alluded to earlier, is we have this sort of labor shortage dynamic happening in the economy. And there's areas in particular that we know are just desperate for workers. And you can think a lot of these are sort of tied to what we could call maybe COVID sensitive industries, right? So the services industry in particular, you know, retail services is having a hard time, leisure, hospitality, accommodation. Those are the areas right now that they're trying to get workers. And for a number of reasons, workers just aren't jumping into these types of jobs in spite of, you know, most of us drive around, we might see, now hiring signs all over the place. And if you look at the type of industry, that's the industry that we're talking about, where we're definitely seeing a lot of these challenges in particular.
Now, people talk about the Great Resignation, a lot of people, record numbers of people leaving jobs. What, as you look at that, what are some of the reasons, the stories behind those statistics? I'm imagining it might be a different story, maybe for each one of those people who changed their job situation.
Yeah, so the Great Resignation, I think, is it's a great term, kind of tying to like the Great Recession, sort of piggybacking off of that language. But I think it might be a little misleading, right? So we know the quit rate's up right now. I think the latest numbers, it was at about 2.8% of labor force quit in the October 2021 numbers, which sounds like a lot. It's about 4.1 million workers. But when you start to unpack, you know, what's happening, who are these people that are quitting and why are they quitting? I think there's a lot of dynamics at play. Right. So part of the Great Resignation conversation is you have a lot of workers who are 55 plus and they might be resigning or quitting, but a lot of them are taking early retirements, or maybe they had their second job, second retirement job, working at a Home Depot or Walmart or something like that, just picking up some hours in retirement. You're seeing a lot of that demographic has kind of left the labor force. That's an important part of the conversation. I think you also see there's a large segment that still has challenges with dependent care. So taking care of children with school fluctuations and things, taking care of aging parents. That's another segment we know that has left. But the other part of this, which I think can't be undersold, is that a lot of the people that are quitting because they have really good job opportunities and they're quitting to take a new job somewhere else. I caught an article recently that kind of said this is like the free agency period for workers, so to speak, because there's a lot of opportunity for them. And, you know, they can switch jobs. Wages are going up right now. And in a labor shortage, they have opportunities where they can get, you know, increases in pay, and maybe they want hybrid remote work opportunities, and companies are willing to do those things because they're looking for workers right now.
Is there a portion of the job market where we're seeing the biggest wage gains? Is it the service sector workers you were talking about earlier?
You know, I know for a fact a lot of the service numbers are up because they're trying everything they possibly can to effectively get people to come on board. You know, I mean, it's interesting, you know, for years we've been talking about the $15 minimum wage thing. Which, you know, from the government perspective, that's been a process, but we're seeing a lot of companies just jumping to do that right now on their own, because they're looking for those types of workers. Of course, the challenge right now with the increase in wages, and it's, you know, that's good news, right? Wages are going up. I think the latest report went up about 4.8% in the recent job numbers or something like that. But the challenge, of course, is it's nice that wages are going up, but we also know the broader perspective is that so is inflation. Mm-hmm. Right. So as things are getting more expensive, it's great that wages are going up so we can pay for some of this stuff. But if the wages aren't keeping up with those inflationary pressures, it's still, you know, while it sounds like it's great news, it's still a challenge when you factor in the inflationary changes we've seen.
Talking to economist Mark Schaefer from St. Norbert College, looking at the latest job number news. You can join in with your personal experience at 800-642-1234. Have you left a job in the last few months or a year? Have you changed jobs, gotten a promotion, gotten a raise? What is your job story? Did you retire early, earlier than you planned to anyway? If you are an employer, how hard is it? Is it hard for you to find workers? Are you having trouble keeping up staffing, or are things going smoothly in your line? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. So, Mark, I talked about some what seemed to be pretty positive job numbers, but then we had the monthly job report from last month, 200-ish thousand new jobs nationwide. Sometimes that sounds like a really good number. This time, economists said not such an exciting number. Why not?
Yeah, so this is where that report can be a little bit interesting to unpack. And as an economist, we don't get invited to actually unpack job numbers report to this detail. So I'm excited for the opportunity, I suppose, Rob.
Yeah.
But this is kind of like a tale of two surveys is kind of how I've heard it phrased. So when these reports come out, there's sort of a household survey and there's sort of an establishment survey. And when we got the household survey, we saw the fall in unemployment down to 4.2%, which is good. That's good news. And we also saw an increase in the participation rate. So workers in the labor force, that's also good news, went up by about 500,000 people. But as you alluded to, the sort of the conflicting information was we had the establishment survey, which is sort of the payroll survey is what they call it. That one showed that rise of about 210,000 jobs. But the problem was we were expecting something like 550,000. Last month, it went up by about 531,000 jobs. So that sort of gets to, you know, what's happening and what was driving this. And there's a couple of things to note that I think are important. When you look at that survey right now, sectors that saw gains business services, transportation, warehousing, construction, manufacturing. A lot of these are heavy goods dependent industries, so to speak. And we think about a switch towards us buying a lot of consumer goods is playing into some of that behavior we're seeing in those numbers. But the losses, and we kind of alluded to this, they were heavy in the retail trade, and they were weak in leisure and hospitality. And the reason why that's important, to sort of get back to the original question here, is those are industries, COVID sensitive in this case, but also industries that are often subject to seasonal fluctuations, a lot of seasonal fluctuations, right? We go into the holidays, these industries typically hire up a lot more workers. So we see a lot of seasonality in these numbers. And one of the things that is one of the concerns about the number we're hearing is there's a lot of ideas or thoughts that probably is a low ball estimate right now. Part of it's because when we actually report these numbers, they usually report the seasonally adjusted number. And one of the problems right now is it's really hard to understand seasonal adjustment because all of the data right now is it's weird, right? It's difficult to do these statistical things because the data is not behaving like we're used to seeing. So the first thing is the seasonal adjustment is definitely playing into this, partially because those job areas in particular are areas that are known to be heavily seasonally adjusted. So that's the first challenge. The second thing, and maybe this is the optimistic part of the conversation, is a lot of this government data, national data that we do, because it's survey-based, a lot of it is subject to revision over time. And one of the things we've noticed in particular with job numbers this year is when the first number comes out for this year in 2021, every single month, with the exception of March, the numbers have been revised upwards, which is optimistic, suggesting that maybe we're not actually, this is probably not telling the full story, and it's probably a little bit higher than that, which is somewhat optimistic.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Janet is with us in Eau Claire. Janet, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about, Janet?
Well, I'm an employer in early childhood. I have a group learning center, an early childhood learning center, daycare, one would say. And I've had to several months ago raise the wages to $15 an hour and still have difficulties. And talking about seasonal, you know, we hire from the universities, so you have to throw that component in it as well. So it's still difficult in trying to build back to the numbers of families we can serve and employees, you know, on payroll.
Janet, thanks so much for sharing that story. I appreciate it, Mark. Is this holding back the economy? So many businesses, I think, in that same boat as Janet's, where, as she said, we could serve more families if we could bring in more workers.
You know, I think, and Janet, given the industry that she's in, and Janet, thank you for calling in. I mean, that actually is a very important industry for a couple of reasons. I think one, realize one of the things holding back the rest of the economy to an extent is you have a lot of people who left the labor force for childcare reasons. And what we're seeing is, hey, if we can't get enough workers in the childcare sector, that actually is something that's holding us back a little bit. And I think the other point that's interesting about that particular industry is, you know, that's an industry that's a service-based industry. So getting back to those COVID-sensitive industries that are service-based, you're interacting with a lot of people face-to-face, especially with little kids in particular. And especially, I have a couple little ones myself. And, you know, getting a two-year-old to wear a mask is not the easiest thing to do if that's what we're talking about in the environment, right? So I think that's going to be another layer to that, in particular with the sector that Janet just referenced of childcare.
Thanks again for the call, Janet. We're talking to macroeconomist Mark Schaefer from St. Norbert College, looking at the latest job numbers and news and where it's all going in the long run. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you an employer? What have the last few months been like for you? Are you hiring like hotcakes, getting lots of applications, or having trouble? And if you have left a job, switched a job, gotten a raise at your current job, love to hear from you as well at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Mark Schaefer, Associate Professor of Economics at St. Norbert College. We're checking out the latest numbers from the U.S. Bureau of Labor and Statistics Job Openings and Labor Turnover Report released this week and wider issues in the U.S. job market. You can join in with your questions, your story as an employee or employer at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Doug is with us in Neenah. Doug, hello.
Hello. Hi, Rob. Hi, Mark. my question, I'm college educated. I've got a very good paying job, you know, $30 plus an hour. But with the inflation that's going on, and like you say, the minimum wage is basically, if you will, let's call it doubling. I know my wage isn't going to double. But the impact of the inflation and, you know, all of that on the person that's not going to get the adjustment, our buying power is now kind of going backwards. I was wondering your point of view on, you know, is this going to just drive the recession further in, or it's going to be hard for those of us that are, quote, middle class right now to stay middle class.
Doug, thanks a lot for the call. Mark, the impact of inflation on people who, in Doug's zone, middle income range, their wages aren't going up, their costs, at least for now, are.
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. That's the general issue with inflation, right? That's why we try to keep it a little bit more in check at about, you know, 2% per year. But I think what you're hitting on, Doug, I think is one of the biggest challenges that employers have that feed into the numbers that we're talking about. And employers find themselves in a difficult situation, right? So they're short workers right now. So they're doing everything they can to incentivize, raise wages, et cetera. But the problem is, and this is exactly what you just hit on, Doug, is that what about everybody else who's been with that firm for a while? They're really loyal. They've been doing great work for years, 5, 10, 15, 20 years, right? What about them? And this is where I think, getting back to the quit numbers that we're talking about, I think employers right now are trying to figure out how do we incentivize new workers to come in, but also make sure we're doing everything we possibly can to retain the good quality workers that we have. And is that, hey, are we going to raise wages by 6 or 7% to match that? That's a difficult thing for a firm to commit to if inflation's not going to be persistent, if it's temporary, for example. Or are they going to try and give bonuses or something instead? But I think you're hitting on the exact point employers have as their problem right now is how do we actually keep the good workers that we have? And we see right now the quit rates rising, partially because a lot of those workers are saying, well, I'm going to switch right now to a company that can pay me more, give me more of those benefits. But I think you're absolutely right. This is a challenge for anybody that's not giving significant wage increases right now, because you're seeing, you know, the recent numbers were up 6.8%. I think that came out yesterday for the November numbers for year over year. And unfortunately, one of the major areas that's driving some of that is what's happening to energy prices, gas prices, and that affects everybody. Right. So, I mean, that's going to be the challenge is what happens with inflation in the next, you know, 3, 6, 9, 12 months. And that right now really is the question that policymakers, particularly the Federal Reserve, that's what they're trying to grapple with right now is what do we do about this? And their challenge is, you know, if they want to do something about inflation in particular, right, they're going to maybe they're going to raise interest rates, a little on the economy, or they're going to pull back some of the asset purchasing that they've done. But of course, one of the challenges is that if they take their foot off the gas to help fix the inflationary problem, you know, what does that do to the GDP? To GDP, because that's going to slow it down. So that's kind of the pickle that we're in right now under the current circumstances.
Doug, thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. We'll go next to Valerie with us in Burlington. Valerie, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. So my concern is in regards to health care. The nurses, the age of the average nurse is getting closer and closer to retirement. And so many nurses right now are leaving the profession. Where does the guest see this shortage, and how might we adapt to it? Where will we get more nurses? The compassion fatigue, I don't like to call it burnout, but I call it compassion fatigue, is immense, where no matter what our training's been in, we've never been up against this in the past. And the amount of nurses that can educate is really at a standstill.
Valerie, thank you so much for sharing that experience. I will say that we, Mark, had done shows over the years pre-pandemic about people worried about a coming crunch, a shortage of nurses, as Valerie said, as they age out of the profession. And then came COVID. What are you watching for with healthcare employees in particular?
You know, I can't say that I'm a healthcare expert per se, but first, I appreciate the question from the caller. I sympathize, especially with the compassion fatigue for all the nurses and doctors in the space. But I think one of the challenges, of course, is that's also a field that we need really good, high quality, educated folks in, and it takes some training, right? It's not like we can just, oh, we need more nurses, let's find some. There's a pipeline I think you have to develop over time, which I think is one of the challenges. But I think it sort of gets to one of the larger issues. and maybe some of this is also just a broader state of Wisconsin thing, is that what's happening to the general demographic switches that we're seeing? Let me give you sort of a secondary example. You know, in Wisconsin, we're a state heavy manufacturing state. This has been a similar conversation for manufacturing for a while, right? It's an aging work population in manufacturing. How do we bring in young new workers to fill this gap? We also have, because we're a manufacturing goods dependent state, right, we rely heavily on transportation logistics. You know, a recent report I saw, projections suggested that the hot job over the next years, and by hot job, I mean job that we need that we're not going to be able to fill or having a hard time filling, is truck drivers. Right. It's the similar thing as trying to figure out how do we actually blend the demographic changes we're seeing from these are the types of jobs that we saw that were, you know, common jobs. And we see a lot of our aging population doing these jobs, but you're not seeing as many people coming up behind them. And in particular, bringing it back to the nursing problem is that that's going to be a difficult space, especially as young people right now who maybe are I teach at college. As young people right now who are witnessing the challenges that the nurses and doctors are facing in this space, you know, that's something where I'd be thinking, gee, maybe that's some stress I don't want to take on and jump into that field. And while again, you'll have some that are compassionate and want to do that, absolutely. But an event like this happens, and then what's that do for, you know, the young people who are living through this, who might go, gee, I want to stay away from that sector for a little while because it seems like it's really, really difficult and challenging. So I wish I had a here's the magic wand answer. But I mean, those would be sort of some of my initial thoughts on the situation.
Valerie, thanks for that call. We heard from Jonathan on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Jonathan wrote, I'd like to find a new job that's more challenging and remunerative, but the much hyped labor shortage is really a wage and respect shortage. Past the $16 to $18 per hour threshold, there's no evidence of a labor shortage whatsoever. Jonathan says you still send job applications off into the no response void. Employers are still hunting unicorns, experienced people seeking another the same job they're already doing for the same pay. Little inclination to train new employees. And yesterday, Jonathan says, I found a job posting offering $14 an hour, master's degree preferred. Do you think employers are keeping up with the reality of the modern market? Jonathan seems to think they are not.
I mean, that's a great question. Again, talking to somebody in a higher education, you know, one of my side responsibilities here is directing our data analytics program. And one of the things I've noticed is you have a lot of these job posting for data analytics are expecting what really is 3 to 8 years experience for people coming right out of college, which is just not realistic. Uh-huh. And I think that's going to be the tension right now. Is, you know, we have a labor shortage in that we have a ton of openings that aren't being filled. That's we know that that's happening, right? But then there starts to slide into the job matching part of the conversation, which I think is what the poster's comments kind of getting to, is how do you match those workers with those jobs? And I think, you know, right now the response has been, let's try and make this more appealing by raising wages and sort of answering it from that perspective. But the opposite side of that is, hey, you raise the wage, but you're still not finding the workers that you want. You know, are there employers then that are actually expecting too much for some of these positions, and they actually have to respond by actually lowering some of those expectations, depending on what the skills are required for that job? So, I mean, I do think we have a job matching situation on our hands right now. I think the other challenge, and this maybe there's a pro and con to this, but you know, with the switch to remote work, and I saw some stat that basically said job postings related to remote work opportunities are way up. Unsurprising, I should say. And one of the things I think that makes this a little bit interesting is what that means, though, is a lot of times we think about, okay, we live in a certain region, we look for jobs in that region. The moment that we just open this up and remote work is a much more common thing, let's say at the moment, at least, you just made everything a lot more competitive, right? So if a job's posted remote, you have a lot more people going for that job from all over the country, for example, which raises the competition bar for some of those types of positions, which is another interesting element of our sort of pandemic living, I guess you could say, or pandemic job market challenges.
Mark, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
My pleasure, Rob. Thanks for having me.
That's Mark Schaefer, Associate Professor of Economics, Director of the Center for Business and Economic Analysis at St. Norbert College. He joins us today for a look at the latest job news and numbers around the country. Coming up Monday here on Central Time, are you ready to rock? The creators of an online guide to Wisconsin geology join the show for a look at the foundation of our state. That's coming up Monday on Central Time.